The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, I had to press some buttons that weren't pressed there, and then I missed the post on the Stray Cats. You noticed that, Sue.
Oh,
I know you noticed it.
And I did, but
damn
it's
okay.
Damn it.
I don't like doing that. You know, I like to get right up to those lyrics, and I didn't do that, but that's okay. You know, just a little adjustment here. We're in transition mode here on
we
the Mark Reardon Show because Abby left a few weeks ago, and Ethan is filling in. We got some other fill-ins, but we're getting by. We're going to talk Kansas City Chiefs football. Sue's going to give us some fantasy picks as well at the bottom of the hour.
Who to play, forward to that.
Who to sit and who to play. Can't wait for that myself. And right now we have Brad Young, 97.1 FM Talk, legal analyst, partner with Harris Dow, Fisher & Young. There is a lot to go over this afternoon with Hunter Biden. It may take 3 or 4 hours. That's what it took in court today. How are you, Brad?
Mark, I am doing great, sir. Thank you.
What the hell happened today? Because it started off in a, well, yeah, I mean, it was very confusing. And then you know what's funny, Brad? We talked about this at the beginning. I don't think I'd ever really heard of this Alford plea deal until you and I talked about it with this Marcellus Williams case here in St. Louis. But that was something else that came up earlier. But now is that a, I'm going to throw a legal term at you here, see if you can get this one.
Doug.
Is that a moot point now, Brad?
Oh, you know, you used one four-letter word and five-letter word, four-letter word, and all of a sudden you think you're a lawyer.
That's right. That's right.
It is moot. Here's the thing about an Alford plea. This is not anything new. It's been around forever. But there's one unique requirement of an Alford plea when you're talking about federal prosecutors. And that is it has to have approval from the Justice Department itself. And that presented a problem here.
Yeah.
And I know I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to talk about what actually happened, not spitball about what could have happened. But an Alford plea really wasn't an option here because of conflict of interest. This was a special prosecutor because this is Biden's son. So if they would have attempted to go for an Alford plea, frankly, it wouldn't have worked because you would have had to have obtained a sign-off by high-ranking officials of the Justice Department who were prohibited from being involved in this case due to a conflict of interest. So functionally, I just don't see that an Alford plea ever would have happened in this case.
But back up just a little bit, just so we know what an Alford plea actually would have meant. I know you say it wouldn't have worked here, but that's kind of how the day started with people talking about this possibility.
It is. And they started talking about an Alford plea really early this morning. And an Alford plea is something that lawyers dreamed up. Okay, let's be honest. And here's what it says.
It's I like so, the honesty.
It is. It's honest. Listen, I'm being honest. It's a way of saying I am not pleading guilty to the charges, but I admit that there is sufficient evidence to convict me if it goes to trial. Now, for most people, that's a difference without distinction. I mean, what's the distinction here? That either I'm pleading guilty or I'm not pleading guilty, but either way, I'm going to the slammer. Okay, so the reality is there's no difference.
But
it allows people to say, I never pled guilty to those
charges. But it sort of straddles the line. And then I guess this guy, Leo Wise, who is one of the attorneys working for the special counsel, says, look, I want to make it crystal clear. The U.S. opposes an Alford plea. Hunter Biden is not innocent. He is guilty.
Right, exactly. And that's why, I mean, that's a great statement. I think practically there would have been impossible to obtain an Alford plea, even if the prosecuting attorney was in favor of it, which he wasn't. So it's a moot point. Here's really exactly what happened. After there was this going back and forth with the prosecutors on this issue with the Alford plea, finally, as the court was ready to literally start picking jurors today, Hunter Biden pled guilty to all 9 charges. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Maybe I shouldn't use that phrase talking about Hunter Biden because we know who he liked to consort with. Anyway, the bottom line is this. It was a 56-page of charges that had to be read. You alluded to this at the top of the show. It took like 90 minutes to read through all of this. And finally, the judge said, did you commit every element of all of these crimes? And Hunter Biden said, yes, yes, I did. And sentencing now has been pushed to December 16. That's when he'll be sentenced. Technically, he could serve up to 17 years in prison. Obviously, if you plead guilty, you don't have. And this is where the gun charge, though, from earlier this year comes into play, Mark, because right now Hunter Biden is a convicted felon as he is pleading guilty to these tax charges. And that must be factored into the judge's decision on sentencing now that Hunter Biden is a convicted felon.
Yeah, so like the Washington Post has a line in their coverage where they say federal judges tend to sentence defendants in tax cases to less time than recommended by federal guidelines. And they say that a U.S. Sentencing Commission report last year said the average tax case sentence was 16 months, even though the average minimum sentence was 28 months. But let me throw another legal term at you here, Brad. I know this is confusing this afternoon. But isn't that all moot? Same term, but I'm going to use it again because he's going to be pardoned.
Well,
right?
And you know what? Here's how you can read between the lines on this, Mark. And I think this is what makes a difference. If you look up until Joe Biden decided not to run for reelection, up to that point, it was damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. You know, we're going to go to trial. I'm innocent of these charges. I'm not going to be convicted. Right? Now, because politically it would have been murder, so to speak, for President Biden to issue a pardon. But now that Biden is off the ticket, Biden is not running for reelection, there's no risk.
No,
there's no risk at all. And Kamala can come out and say, I'm against this. I oppose this. I think it's wrong. She can say everything she wants. But the bottom line is in December or early January, if President Biden pardons his son Hunter on this, there's really no ramifications.
But there, if he doesn't pardon him, then Hunter Biden will go to prison, right? I mean, there's no
question.
Option. Yeah, so this is going to be interesting to watch. So I thought this was an interesting exchange, too. And I don't know if we have audio of any of this. I don't think there were cameras or audio. But the attorney, and I played Abby Lowell's statement, which was actually comical before the top of the hour. He says to the judge, Your Honor has indicated that there is a need to address the public interest, but Mr. Biden needs to address the private interest. We saw the exhibit list, the witness list. There are more than a half dozen members of his immediate family. There is also a private interest that has to be considered. So he's making the case that he wants to avoid a trial so his family doesn't have to spend more than one day talking about what happened when he was a man addicted to drugs. So he's falling on his sword here, Brad, which he could have done a long time ago, by the way.
Yes.
You want to avoid embarrassment for your family? How about do this 3 years ago or earlier when this was all lingering over you? But they didn't do that. And by the way, the other thing that's hilarious here, as you know, is that the guy that's prosecuting this case is the same guy, David Weiss, that wanted to cut him the sweetheart deal and then finally got called on the carpet about it.
Yeah, in the sweetheart deal the last time around, the judge was so shocked by the sweetheart deal,
right?
That the judge literally said to the prosecutor Leo Weiss, "Have you ever in your career ever even seen a plea deal like this?" And he said, "No." So it was clear it was the definition of a sweetheart deal, and only because the judge had the intestinal fortitude here to say, no, I'm not going to do this, that brought us to this day.
So Leo Weiss said this too. I just want to throw this in there because when Abby Lowell says that, oh, you know, there's private interest and he's doing this because his family would be embarrassed. He's, you know, basically trying to play him off as a hero there. So Mr. Weiss says, look, the truth matters. We're not here because of what the government did. We're not the ones that are deciding to call members of his family. He's the one that triggered this series of events, and that needs to be remembered. Now, the other thing that Abby Lowell said, Brad, was that he's paid his back taxes and his fines. Could that soften the sentence potentially?
Well, restitution is always one element that a judge has to consider in sentencing, and that will go in. Listen, there is nothing more complicated in law than federal sentencing guidelines. I mean, it's literally the splitting of the atom when it comes to the legal profession. So anyone that says, oh, based on this, I can tell you he's going to actually serve this amount of time, they're lying. I've got a very good friend of mine who was a former federal prosecutor. He said that they would have to literally go through spreadsheets to try to figure out exactly what the sentencing would work out to be. And that's only the spreadsheets that they had access to. So we don't really know. It is going to be a factor that he has repaid the back taxes. But keep in mind, if this case would have gone to trial either today or in the coming weeks, that evidence would not have been admissible at trial. the fact that he already repaid the back taxes.
Oh, that's
that would have been excluded because subsequent remedial measures are always excluded as evidence because it could taint the jury's decision to punish someone if they've already so-called fixed it. So that would have been excluded.
Got it.
Excluded from trial.
You would have thought that I would have known that, knowing all these legal terms.
Well,
Brad,
yeah,
but
you are an
wrong.
Expert.
So let's segue to Jack Smith, because this is a little confusing as well. In this new twist in the federal election interference case, the one from Florida, Jack Smith submits this, described as a mysterious document. And there was a filing that said the government's classified ex parte in camera and under seal notice regarding classified discovery, which they say is a formal way of saying that the DOJ has submitted a confidential document that contains classified information in the case. So what's going on here and what can you tell us?
Well, the whole issue and the whole reason why the entire Jack Smith situation has gotten to where it is because of the Supreme Court ruling this summer. Just very quickly, the Supreme Court ruling this past summer said that presidents, whether it's Trump, Biden, or any other president, enjoy wide discretion, or they enjoy a very large area of immunity when it comes to criminal prosecution, and they enjoy complete immunity when it comes to any official acts of the president. So here's the question that brings us up to today, because Jack Smith had to refile his prior indictment regarding January 6th because of the fact that his prior indictment contained evidence of official acts, and they had to vacuum that all out.
Okay.
So now the new indictment gets filed. But what occurred today, and the whole thing about the mystery document, is that the evidence that was presented to the judge today, supposedly, we don't know because it's still under a seal, but supposedly this mystery document that was given to Judge Chutkan in the January 6th case involves supposed evidence that was, and I'm reading here from the quote here, it is hidden from the public and Trump's lawyers as of Wednesday. So we really don't know what it is. We don't know what it goes to. And right now, the fact that Jack Smith hasn't revealed that evidence, to me, I mean, you can't reach any conclusions one way or the other, but if it's a smoking gun, why wouldn't you just release it to the public?
Right.
That's what we don't know.
Oh, that's annoying.
And because it could be potentially, might not be that big of a deal.
Right. It might be, in other words, the threat of, and keep in mind, this gamesmanship happens in litigation all the time. The threat of releasing information can be more beneficial to one side than the actual release of that information. So that could be what's at play here in terms of this mystery document.
So what do you make of this? Is NBC and CBS News is quoting Judge Chutkan as saying this to Trump's lawyers, that she's not concerned with the electoral schedule in response to them trying to drag out the case, adding there needs to be, this is the quote, needs to be some forward motion in this case, regardless of when an election is scheduled. What do you make of that?
Well, what Anything? I make of that is, well, I do. And the realization here is Judge Chutkan can make that statement, Mark, because there is literally a 0% chance this case goes to trial before November. Zero. There is no chance in this or any other of the multiverses. This is not going to trial. And so because of that, that doesn't need to be a concern about anything here, because we're looking at a late 2025 at best trial, because this case is going to go back up to the Supreme Court. I guarantee you that once this indictment goes forward and the court has to apply what the Supreme Court said, it's going to go right back up to the Supreme Court next year. And that takes time.
So, and when she says, you know, I'm just curious as an attorney, the response of the judge, because the defense attorneys are saying, look, we're being treated unfairly. John Lauro is one of the attorneys. And she says to him, I don't need any more rhetoric on how serious or grave this is. And when he says that, you know, this case concerned the presidency of the United States, Judge Chutkan's response was, I'm not talking about the presidency of the United States. I'm talking about a 4-count indictment. I mean, I understand why the judge would say that, because that's the focus in that courtroom. So is there anything wrong with that response to Trump's attorneys?
No, not at all. I think that response by Judge Chutkan is exactly the response that you would want to hear. And that's, in fact, if it were any different than that response, I would be concerned.
Yeah. Well, this will be interesting to see. And like you said, it's not going to go to trial before Election Day, and then this is going to drag out, and the circumstances might change depending on who wins the election. It's an interesting time. Guys like you got a lot of things to analyze, Brad, and I appreciate that here. Let's talk about something much more important, and that is football. Did you go to the game last week, the Mizzou game? I can't remember.
You know, I did not. I was watching it at home, watched every play, but no, didn't make it to the game.
Good start, right? And they have Buffalo this weekend. I'm going to go this weekend to the game. I'm very much looking forward to it. Buffalo can be a tough, you know, tough opponent, and they've presented challenges to different teams, including Mizzou. They've had them on the schedule in the past where, you know, you just don't roll over a team like this. So you have to be concerned. I think one of the best things that could have happened is what happened to Florida State, Boston College beating them, because now, not that they would go in, I think the coaching staff has really, really done a great job last season in particular of preparing these kids for each and every game, not taking opponents lightly, really preparing for the tough SEC opponents, but making sure that you don't overlook anyone. And I think BC beating Florida State like that certainly opens up some eyes and says, hey, we can't let that happen to us, right?
Well, absolutely. And then when you look at the Mizzou schedule coming up, I mean, there's not Vanderbilt. Obviously, that's not going to be a challenge.
But they looked better last weekend, too. I don't think you can take anything lightly, not in the SEC.
I know that. But Vanderbilt, when it comes to the SEC, they're like the, what was the team that always played against the Harlem Globetrotters? I think it was the Senators.
Yeah.
I mean, to some extent, let's just be real. Vanderbilt has always been the Senators of the SEC.
Right. Okay. That's fine. Except that I'm going to pull this clip when Mizzou loses to Vanderbilt. I'm going to say it's your fault, Brad Young. Just so you know.
But listen, the Texas A&M the following week, that game, I'm going to be watching that very, very closely because Texas A&M can bring the heat, and I'm going to enjoy watching that.
Yeah, well, look, it's going to be a fun season. Are you? I can't remember if you're a big NFL fan, too. You ready for tonight?
Oh, listen, we've already got pregame snacks, halftime snacks, and postgame snacks. So already planned out.
It's a little sad how much my life is influenced by the National Football League, but it has been for decades and decades. I embrace it. I love this time of year. My two favorite teams, because I do cheat and I have both. I got the Chiefs tonight and then the Packers tomorrow. Although, I'm going to try to do this, Brad. I'm going to see ELO tomorrow night at Enterprise Center. I've never seen Jeff Lynne at ELO. Very excited. But I think, and I'm not a big recorded sports guy, but since this is such an important game, the first game, I think I'm going to turn my phone off, not pay attention to the ESPN alerts, and try to watch the Packers game after the concert. Wish me luck.
Good luck with that. And listen, you're gonna have to go into some area that's blocked out of cell calls, because even if you turn your phone off, Mark, you do not have the guts to not turn your phone back on. I'm telling you, you don't.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I'm already concerned about that, but I'd like to not know what happens. But of course, like the person sitting in front of me will probably show their wife, hey, look, the Packers just scored or something like that.
I know. Just carry around your own Faraday cage and you'll be fine.
All right, Brad, thank you so much for the analysis this afternoon. Very appreciated.
My pleasure, Mark.
All right. And on the topic of football, Alex Gold, who is with 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City, a preview.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Of the Chiefs game tonight at Arrowhead. Here we go. Is right. The NFL season starts tonight. Let me think about this here. I think I might need this instead. I love Supertramp, but yeah, there you go. My producer, Ethan Hannaford, today has this ugly, ugly purple shirt on. How the hell are you a Vikings fan? I don't get that at all.
Well, like many St. Louisans, I was once left homeless about 10 years ago, and, I married into a Vikings family.
Really?
That's the answer. It's as simple as that.
I'm so sad for you, Ethan. I can't believe that happened.
There's
much better families.
I have plenty of years of pain ahead of me.
Yeah, you probably do. Look, they're not looking very good right now because they have quarterback issues, but let's talk a little football here as we start the kickoff of the NFL season tonight in Kansas City. Alex Gold is with us from Kansas City 610 Sports Radio. Alex, I understand it's a beautiful day like we have here in St. Louis and Kansas City as well, and you're in the press box. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, great to be on with you guys. Yeah, it's a nice night. A little warm right now. It's supposed to cool off a little bit and maybe a chance of some rain. But you could definitely, as you walk into the parking lot, the tailgating, the smell of that, there's nothing better. And as you said, football's back and you can kind of feel that energy just walking around the parking lot.
Well, what are you excited for? Because I cannot wait. Look, I just made a little lineup change here and I took George Pickens off of my fantasy team and I put Xavier Worthy. I drafted my reach for Xavier Worthy in my fantasy league, Alex, because I think he's going to be a superstar.
Well, look, this is the portion of the season where there's a chance that he might have some of that with Hollywood Brown out. Now, typically, Andy Reid waits to utilize rookies. You know, usually he needs to see them prove to him that they have a good grasp of the offense. But because Hollywood Brown is not available tonight and they want to show everybody basically they got this deep passing attack again that they haven't had since they had Tyreek Hill, I think he'll get some opportunities. I don't think he's going to have like the second or third most snaps of the entire wide receiver group necessarily, but I think he'll get some opportunities, some shots down the field. You know, his longest reception total tonight over under is set at 20.5. And so I think that's in play tonight, which should be good for you in the fantasy football world.
Yeah, and look, I know that he's a young player, but because of Hollywood Brown, that is one of the reasons that I'm starting him. But let me get an update. What's the prediction on him getting back?
So the thought is right now that there's a chance next week, but most people believe we're talking probably week three against the Atlanta Falcons, just based off of the timeline of Tyreek Hill, who had a similar injury, and you just look at the weeks and how long that took. Plus, it's so early in the season, and this team, you know, is going to be in the postseason. There's a chance they're going to be back in the Super Bowl, so it's a grind of a year. They're not going to push anything and jeopardize the meat of the schedule and ultimately the postseason. So I think next week is probably still up in the air. Week three is more of the realistic target for him.
So what are, where everybody's talking, is there a three-peat possible? Look, the way that I see this, and I'm no expert, but this is potentially a better offense than the Chiefs had last year. And then the question marks might be on the defensive side. And I can't remember what's the injury situation right now on the defense.
Well, they're in better position, I think, entering the season than they were a year ago. One, just because literally in week one, they didn't have Chris Jones or Travis Kelce last year. But this entire team this year, they're better heading into the season than they were a year ago. I think this year's team is closer to the team that actually went to the Super Bowl and played the Bucs. I know they lost to the Bucs, but at that point in time, the offensive line had fallen apart. But this, to me, has a chance to be the best team. And I know it's scary for those that aren't Chiefs fans, baby, but the best team that Mahomes has had. I think it has the ability to do that when you look at a top 10 offense getting back to being that after being 14th in points per game a year ago. I think they're back in the top 10, maybe top 5. And defensively, even if they were to take a slight step back, I still think they're in position to be a top 10 defense. So in any year, whether you have Mahomes or not, if you're a top 10 defense and a top 10 offense, you're absolutely in play to once again hoist the Lombardi Trophy.
These first couple of games are always kind of tricky. The Chiefs opened up the season last year against the Lions, and they lost that game. Obviously, they didn't lose too many games in 2023, and they went on to win the championship. But what are the Ravens like coming into this season, the expectations on Baltimore right now?
So it's a new-look offensive line. You know, they replace a couple pieces. I think everybody wants to see, you know, how effective is that. And then the big name, Derrick Henry, comes in. And in that AFC title game, the Ravens only ran the ball 6 times. And so that was a huge talking point after, like, why did they not run the ball against the Chiefs defense, who actually struggled a little bit against the run last year? The Chiefs were the 8th worst in yards per carry given up, and yet they only ran it 6 times. And so tonight, I think you're going to see, with the addition of Derrick Henry, the Ravens really try to aggressively run the ball, give some different looks, and we'll see how the Chiefs adjust from there. Other than that, the wide receiver room, you know, they still have Rashad Bateman. They still have Zay Flowers. Their defense is always one of the best defenses in football. I think this is a Ravens team that most would agree it's probably the second best team in the AFC. As the dust settles later on, maybe the Texans emerge. But right now, Chiefs, Ravens, heading into the season, that'd be your 1-2.
Let's talk about the Texans just a little bit, because I think there's a very strong possibility that the Texans can emerge this season. And C.J. Stroud was dazzling to watch last year. He's got 3 receivers that may have, 10 touchdowns or more. So that might be a team to watch. I'm curious about your thoughts on the rest of the AFC beyond that as well.
Yeah, so I think with the Houston Texans, how do they handle the pressure of now being expected to win and all these primetime slots? A year ago, they were in no standalone games. Nobody was really paying attention to them. First-year head coach and all of that, as you laid out. And now there's real expectation to win their division, to maybe take that next step as an organization. They made some really nice moves in the offseason. Their defense, to me, got better with the addition of Danielle Hunter from Minnesota. And so I think Houston just needs to prove that they can handle the pressure that comes with it. But the talent is all the way there.
Yeah.
I mean, Tank Dell's back and healthy. Stephon Diggs is the addition. So I think Houston's in the mix. But Cincinnati, it comes down to Joe Burrow and whether or not you think he's healthy. If Joe Burrow's healthy, we see every year that he's been healthy, they've gone on deep runs. They beat the Chiefs, obviously, one year in the AFC title game. So for me, Cincinnati has the ability to once again emerge as the biggest challenger to Kansas City. But Joe Burrow has to stay healthy. And, of course, Cincinnati will be here next week.
Yeah, he also has to get rid of that goofy hair. That might be a big, important part of his season. I'm just saying.
Hey, Alex.
Go ahead.
I wanted to hone in on the AFC West specifically. Obviously, like you said, the Chiefs well beyond everyone else in that division. But is there anyone else at least that intrigues you that could potentially be making a push for the playoffs come later this year?
A lot of questions in that division, right?
There are, and I think it's the easiest division in football, though, guys. I think it's the least competitive division. You mentioned some questions. Look at Denver. They got a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix, and then even if he performs at a decent level, who's he throwing the ball to? Courtland Sutton, there's nobody else really in that offense. Then you look at the Las Vegas Raiders. Gardner Minshew is a starting quarterback. He's good for one surprise win or two a year. I think we've seen that, but we know the limitation as well. And then the Chargers, long-term, I think the hire of Jim Harbaugh is going to be fantastic for them, but they gutted that team a little bit. They had some aging guys they kicked out of town, and they probably needed to. But I think this is a rebuild year out there, even though Justin Herbert's still one of the best quarterbacks in football. So it's the AFC West, to me, is the least competitive division in the AFC. And when I look at some of the bets even out there, Mark, the sweep this AFC West goes 6-0 for the first time since 2022. That's actually a bet that I placed before the season.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Alex Gold with Kansas City 610 Sports Radio. Let's shift just briefly to the NFC. I cheat, Alex. I think I've told you this before. I love the Kansas City Chiefs. Been a fan for decades and decades since really the Cardinals left St. Louis. But I moved to Milwaukee in 1997 after Brett Favre won that first Super Bowl. And I was kind of a Packers fan as a kid, and I just got locked in. I married a Packers fan. So I'm really excited. We got back-to-back great games, the Chiefs and then the Eagles and the Packers tomorrow night. Now, we got questions about, you know, Jalen Hurts and the Eagles moving forward. A little disappointment, some, you know, rough moments between him and his coach last year. I don't know if they've settled that. And then you got, on the other side, Jordan Love, who seemed to emerge as a real, real potential star in the NFL when some of us who were Packers fans weren't quite sure about Jordan a year ago. So you got another great matchup tomorrow night with two teams that could be fighting it out for the NFC.
No doubt. And, you know, obviously being in Brazil would just be interesting in its own right with some of the issues down there. I'm fascinated just to see how they pull that thing off tomorrow night and hopefully everything goes well. As far as the on-the-field stuff with the Green Bay Packers, yeah, Jordan Love's, I think, confirmation game for a lot of people was the win against Kansas
City.
That's right. We all remember that last year on Sunday night, and that was really impressive. I think that's when people really outside of Green Bay started to notice his performance. Now they add in Josh Jacobs. I love that addition if he can stay healthy. I still think he's someone that has something left on the tires there. My question for them is going to be still, what was it, an 8-9 game stretch from Jordan Love where he looked like one of the better quarterbacks in the league? I still am a little on the fence on if we can put him for sure in the top 10. Maybe after 2 or 3 weeks, that'll be an obvious thing. And we're saying, all right, of course he's there. But for me, I have him as like the 11th, 12th best quarterback in football.
I have questions. Look, I think that's wise to be a little bit leery right now because it was only one season. But certainly he looked comfortable, and I think there's offensive weapons that they have, which will be pretty effective moving forward. What else in the NFC? I mean, besides the Eagles and the Packers, what are you taking a look at? I mean, the Lions were so close last year. Obviously, disappointment from San Francisco. Both of those teams should be in the mix this season as well.
The fact the Lions were able to retain their offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, who most people regard as one of the better young up-and-coming coaches in the league, and he didn't end up getting a head coaching job and had an opportunity to and stayed there, gives me plenty of faith that the Lions will be right back where they were in terms of, you know, top of the division. Do they get back to an NFC title game? I'm not so sure. I mean, even Dan Campbell acknowledged after the loss last year that, hey, we may never get back here. But they returned just about everybody, and they retained their OC. So I think the Lions will be in the mix there. And then, of course, in that same division, let's stick with the NFC North. Everybody wants to see Caleb Williams, and what is he going to do this season? I'm skeptical that they have the right head coach in place to take the jump to a playoff spot. I have them as like an 8 or 9 win team, and them actually firing their head coach at the end of the year and hiring Ben Johnson, the OC from the Detroit Lions, as the head coach next year in Chicago. But I can't wait to see what Caleb Williams can do, because I do think he's the real deal. I just don't know if they have the right head coach in place.
What should be a fair expectation for the Bears? Obviously, they added a bunch of pieces, you know, to build around Caleb Williams here for the next couple of seasons. But what is a fair expectation for year one of this?
Yes, I don't think it's fair to automatically assume they're going to the playoffs. And I know a lot of people nationally are under that mindset, and it all is centered around, you know, Caleb Williams, who enters, admittedly, the best situation we've ever seen a rookie quarterback enter. I mean, think about the weapons around him. They draft Roma Dunes. They already had DJ Moore. They got Cole Kmet, Keenan Allen. I mean, they have the weapons in place there, and that defense was really good down the stretch when ultimately they found a way to win seven games. So I think this is a team that's going to be right on the fringe, and people are going to be excited about. I mean, they open up against Tennessee in week one. I think that's the game they win, and so that'll fuel some more of the fire. But to me, realistic is that they're a fringe playoff team, and then they have momentum going into the following season, even if it is with a new head coach.
I just think that, you know, this is my concern about Caleb. There's no doubt that he's talented, and you can see the potential there. But you do have a pretty significant record, Pat Mahomes is included here, where quarterbacks kind of sit and they observe and they learn, and then they enter the league. Now, you know, we saw what C.J. Stroud did. Look, Jaden Daniels is going to start for Washington, and I think I'm going to be very curious to see how he performs as well. But typically, Alex, some of those quarterbacks that take a little bit more time perform better over the long term in the NFL.
They do. I mean, right here in Kansas City with Alex Smith in that scenario, everybody points to that as the way to do it. But I also think, you know, Mark, with the contracts now in the NFL and taking advantage of a guy on a rookie contract – and just where the pressure is from a front office perspective and a coaching perspective, I think you're going to see more and more teams, certainly if you're the number one overall pick in Caleb's case, not do the whole sit behind thing. I know it worked for Jordan Love, but that's because Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback in front of him. And look, I think Patrick Mahomes would have been great his rookie year, guys, if he didn't sit behind Alex Smith. I'm not saying he didn't learn anything, but who's to say Mahomes wouldn't have put together the rookie year that C.J. Stroud just did? I mean, we'll never know the exact answer, but I find it hard to believe that Mahomes would have struggled his rookie year. Just like I don't think Caleb Williams is going to struggle. But if people are just judging him on win and loss, I don't think, you know, he's going to necessarily get to the same win mark that C.J. Stroud did.
So you and I, we don't have a lot of time to do this now. Maybe in the future weeks, we'll talk a little sports wagering and gambling on the NFL. But I probably mentioned this to you before. There was a show that was on Max last year, Bookie, and I can't remember exactly the scene when it happened, but there's a scene when someone's, because sports wagering in California is not legal, so it was basically centered around a guy who is a bookie, Sebastian Maniscalco. And Sebastian Maniscalco is in the car, and he's putting some bets together for a client. And at one point, you know, it's a parlay. I like to play parlays, and I think the quote is, he questions the dude that he's talking to and his betting strategy, and he goes, it's just hard to pick three things right in the NFL. And you wouldn't think that it is, but it is damn hard to pick three things, whether it's an over-under, a win, covering the total. That's not easy. And you know what? It's a lot harder here in these first 2 weeks, I would say.
It is. You're right. Everybody wants to bet the NFL because it's the most popular sport going, and the NFL's king, but it's actually, it is the toughest sport to bet on. It really is. Like it is so difficult to do. Everybody thinks they have all this knowledge and a good grasp on the league, but you said it. I mean, week one, too, we think we know exactly how this team is going to perform, and then there's also overreaction, and you got to be careful if you bet next week, like not to overreact because one team had a poor performance. So the benefit of that, I will say, is the books are also trying to figure out the same thing, right?
That's true.
So there's some opportunity where the lines haven't settled. By the time we get to week four or five, the books have also figured out, you know, so that's the name of the game, trying to figure out where you can find that edge, where you think a line is off already heading into week one.
Yep. Look, I look very much forward to Overreaction Monday. It's just around the corner after the opening games.
That's the best.
Have fun tonight, Alex Gold. I'm jealous. Chiefs Kingdom. Let's go, Chiefs. Threepeat around the corner. Take care.
Appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you. All right, we are wrapping up a Thursday edition of the show. Sue Thomas, I'm going to let you gauge this. We started on Tuesday because of the holiday. We were very concerned that because, and this works in a weird way, that the holiday week would maybe slow us down. I think it's been a pretty quick week.
Well, I'm somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
But I get you.
Maybe it's because, look, we started off with the news of my son Evan and his girlfriend Natalie had a little baby this morning, so I'm a grandpa now. We tried to figure out what to call me, whether it's going to be Pop-Pop. No, it won't. Or
Dodo.
Something else. Dodo was one of the suggestions.
Dodo or Big Daddy.
Right. But so there's been a lot happening in my world, and I'm super excited about the NFL, and I'm going to ELO tomorrow night, the Mizzou game. So we're going to have a great roundtable tomorrow. Jane will be here also on the panel. We'll have State Rep Donna Behringer and Sean Flower, who's always great. He's the mayor of Eureka. We'll also do some fun stuff in the 4 o'clock hour, Paul Hall on entertainment. We have our friend Mr. Cusimano. My friend Dawn Kendrick is coming in. She's doing some media stuff here in St. Louis. Dawn used to work at Channel 30 when Channel 30 had like a news department way back when.
Sure.
And then she went to Cleveland, so she's been in news. We all worked together. I had my friend Chris Trevino on the air last week. Chris has been with the Missouri Tigers on their radio network for football and basketball for decades, and he never left Columbia. He graduated around the same time I did from J school, but it was Dawn and Chris was the anchor at KMIZ, the ABC affiliate, and Savannah Guthrie was there back there in the early 90s, and I was doing film reviews on that TV station.
Wow, that's
listen
that's
to the
going
powerhouse
back.
Talent that was on Woo! That show back then. You know, the funny thing about those film reviews, Sue, I actually got paid to do that, which is kind
really?
Of amazing. You know how media works.
Yeah.
They paid me, I think I said, $50 a week I got paid, which back then, that was pretty good money.
Wow. Yeah, heck yeah, it is.
It was
or
my
was.
Car payment. It was my car. Oh, yeah, Matt Pauley's going to join us tomorrow night, so we'll unfortunately we'll talk about the Cardinals and what's going to happen with the Cardinals, because this is going to be rather fascinating to see unfurl in the coming weeks. So I want to do audio cut of the day, but I have to wind it in with some commentary and narration, but let's do this here.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
I might get to Abby Lowell, Hunter Biden's attorney, because that was so comedic what he said. But we started off the show, and this is rather devastating and very confusing. The shooting in Houston, you had four people that died, two teachers. I'm sorry, not in Houston.
No, no.
Houston's on my mind because of my son.
Correct.
Outside
near
of Atlanta.
Near Atlanta.
Two teachers and two students that are dead. This kid who did it, Colt Gray, I don't like to say the names, but there's information about him because in May of last year, not May of this year, in May of 2023, law enforcement went to his home because there were threats to carry out a school shooting online. And the kid said that he was concerned that someone was accusing him of threatening to shoot up a school, saying that he would never say such a thing, even in a joking manner. Jackson County Sheriff's Office did the investigation. It was a tip from the FBI about a threat to open fire in a local middle school at the time. Now, they used Discord. I don't know that format. Do you know that format?
I do not.
Social media platform. The FBI said that the email address was associated with the teen. The teenager told, keep in mind, he's 13 at the time. Right? He tells officers that he had previously used Discord but got rid of his account earlier because too many people kept hacking his account. He was afraid someone would use his information for nefarious purposes. Well, now we know that nobody hacked his account and he was using that as an excuse. But the profile name was written in Russian. And this is interesting because when translated, it spelled out Lanza, L-A-N-Z-A. That is apparently a reference to Adam Lanza, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooter.
Ugh.
Colin Gray, who's the father, said that he didn't know anything about Discord. He didn't know the email address. He said his son does not know or speak Russian. And he said that, you know, his son was allowed to use hunting rifles when supervised, but all the other guns were not accessible. And we're going to find out if that's true. But what's interesting is that one of the officers, this is May of 23, not May of 24. One of the officers was concerned and urged the father to keep the firearms locked away, advised him on May 21st, to keep the teen out of school until the matter could be resolved. On the 23rd of May, the investigator says that the case would be exceptionally cleared. Those are the words used. It's in quotes. I'm not sure why they say exceptionally, because the tip alleging the kid's role in the threat could not be substantiated. So they didn't confirm, and they say they couldn't confirm whether Discord was linked to the kid or not, and they said the FBI tip was listed as unreliable. That's what we know at this point. But you know what I said earlier today, Sue? We now know 100 million things more than we know about the guy that tried to kill Trump on this kid, and it's day one.
Yeah, it's true.
That's really weird. Now, on the audio front, some of the students talking about this yesterday.
Pop, pop. And then after that, like, our teacher went to, like, spy out the window. It's just like, everybody get down. And they can hear, like, pop, 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 like, just going off.
I remember being in class, and I just heard boom, 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 boom.
I don't know how these kids will feel safe. This student says she doesn't feel safe.
I don't want to come back, and I don't, like, our safety isn't guaranteed, as you can see. I mean, they brought a big gun, not even, like, a pistol. Like, they brought a big gun to kill that can kill numerous people.
I think that was a boy, by the way. I might have misgendered. And then the sheriff kind of talking about how it all wrapped up yesterday.
Obviously, the shooter was armed, and our school resource officer engaged him. And the shooter quickly realized that if he did not give up, that it would end with an OIS, an officer-involved shooting. He gave up, got on the ground, and the deputy took him into custody.
Yeah, that was actually from yesterday, that news conference. We aired a portion of it. So I think we have some answers about the background here of this kid, but still a lot of questions. And I don't even think they even said what type of gun was used.
Not
today.
Yet.
So a lot of this stuff is still not known. But there you go, Sue. And that's just a terrible story. We'll talk about it on the Reardon Roundtable tomorrow afternoon at 3. Looking forward to it. Enjoy the Chiefs game. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Corner, take
hey,
care.
Appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you. All right, we are wrapping up a Thursday edition of the show. Sue Thomas, I'm going to let you gauge this. We started on Tuesday because of the holiday. We were very concerned that because, and this works in a weird way, that the holiday week would maybe slow us down. I think it's been a pretty quick week.
Well, I'm somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
But I get you.
Maybe it's because, look, we started off with the news of my son Evan and his girlfriend Natalie had a little baby this morning, so I'm a grandpa now. We tried to figure out what to call me, whether it's going to be Pop Pop. No, it won't. Or
Dodo.
Something else. Dodo was one of the suggestions.
Dodo or Big Daddy.
Right. But so there's been a lot happening in my world, and I'm super excited about the NFL, and I'm going to ELO tomorrow night, the Mizzou game. So we're going to have a great roundtable tomorrow. Jane will be here also on the panel. We'll have State Rep Donna Behringer and Sean Flower, who's always great. He's the mayor of Eureka. We'll also do some fun stuff in the 4 o'clock hour, Paul Hall on entertainment. We have our friend Mr. Cusimano. My friend Dawn Kendrick is coming in. She's doing some media stuff here in St. Louis. Dawn used to work at Channel 30 when Channel 30 had like a news department way back when.
Sure.
And then she went to Cleveland, so she's been in news. We all work together. I had my friend Chris Trevino on the air last week. Chris has been with the Missouri Tigers on their radio network for football and basketball for decades, and he never left Columbia. He graduated around the same time I did from J school, but it was Dawn and Chris was the anchor at KMIZ, the ABC affiliate, and Savannah Guthrie was there back there in the early 90s, and I was doing film reviews on that TV station.
Wow, that's
listen
that's
to the
going
powerhouse
back.
Talent that was on Woo! That show back then. You know, the funny thing about those film reviews, Sue, I actually got paid to do that, which is kind
really?
Of amazing. You know how media works.
Yeah.
They paid me, I think I said, $50 a week I got paid, which back then, that was pretty good money.
Wow. Yeah. Heck yeah, it is.
It was my car payment. It was my car. Oh, yeah. Matt Pauly's going to join us tomorrow night, so we'll talk about the Cardinals and what's going to happen with the Cardinals, because this is going to be rather fascinating to see unfurl in the coming weeks. So I want to do audio cut of the day, but I have to wind it in with some commentary and narration, but let's do this here.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
I might get to Abby Lowell, Hunter Biden's attorney, because that was so comedic what he said. But we started off the show, and this is rather devastating and very confusing. The shooting in Houston, you had 4 people that died, 2 teachers. I'm sorry, not in Houston.
No, no.
Houston's on my mind because of my son.
Correct.
Outside
near
of Atlanta. Near Atlanta. 2 teachers and 2 students that are dead. This kid who did it, Colt Gray, I don't like to say the names, but there's information about him because in May of last year, not May of this year, in May of 2023, law enforcement went to his home because there were threats to carry out a school shooting online. And the kid said that he was concerned that someone was accusing him of threatening to shoot up a school, saying that he would never say such a thing, even in a joking manner. Jackson County Sheriff's Office did the investigation. It was a tip from the FBI about a threat to open fire in a local middle school at the time. Now, they used Discord, which I don't know that format. Do you know that format?
I do not.
Social media platform. The FBI said that the email address was associated with the teen. The teenager told, keep in mind, he's 13 at the time, right? He tells officers that he had previously used Discord, but got rid of his account earlier because too many people kept hacking his account. He was afraid someone would use his information for nefarious purposes. Well, now we know that nobody hacked his account, and he was using that as an excuse. But the profile name was written in Russian. And this is interesting because when translated, it's spelled out Lanza, L-A-N-Z-A. That is apparently a reference to Adam Lanza, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooter.
Ugh.
Colin Gray, who's the father, said that he didn't know anything about Discord. He didn't know the email address. He said his son does not know or speak Russian. And he said that, you know, his son was allowed to use hunting rifles when supervised, but all the other guns were not accessible. And we're going to find out if that's true. But what's interesting is that one of the officers, This is May of 23, not May of 24. One of the officers was concerned and urged the father to keep the firearms locked away, advised him on May 21st, to keep the teen out of school until the matter could be resolved. On the 23rd of May, the investigator says that the case would be exceptionally cleared. Those are the words used. It's in quotes. I'm not sure why they say exceptionally, because the tip alleging the kid's role in the threat could not be substantiated. So they didn't confirm, and they say they couldn't confirm whether Discord was linked to the kid or not. And they said the FBI tip was listed as unreliable. That's what we know at this point. But you know what I said earlier today, Sue? We now know 100 million things more than we know about the guy that tried to kill Trump on this kid. And it's day one.
Yeah, it's true.
That's really weird. Now, on the audio front, some of the students talking about this yesterday.
Pop, pop. And then after that, like, our teacher went to, like, spy out the window. It's just like, everybody get down. And they can hear, like, pop, 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 like, just going off.
I remember being in class, and I just heard boom, 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 boom.
I don't know how these kids will feel safe. This student says she doesn't feel safe.
I don't want to come back, and I don't, like, our safety isn't guaranteed, as you can see. I mean, they brought a big gun, not even, like, a pistol. Like, they brought a big gun to kill that can kill numerous people.
I think that was a boy, by the way. I might have misgendered. And then the sheriff kind of talking about how it all wrapped up yesterday.
Obviously, the shooter was armed, and our school resource officer engaged him. And the shooter quickly realized that if he did not give up, that it would end with an OIS, or an officer-involved shooting. He gave up, got on the ground, and the deputy took him into custody.
Yeah, that was actually from yesterday, that news conference. We aired a portion of it. So I think we have some answers about the background here of this kid, but still a lot of questions. And I don't even think they even said what type of gun was used.
Not yet.
So a lot of this stuff is still not known. But there you go, Sue. And that's just a terrible story. We'll talk about it on the Reardon Roundtable tomorrow afternoon at 3. Looking forward to it. Enjoy the Chiefs game. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.